I'm having a bad allergy day. And I don't know why. There's no pollen outside. I don't see dust balls flying around my studio, but yet my nose is quite active. It's like Mount Vesuvius. It's like an active volcano. And lava's coming out. Actual lava. And I'm concerned about it. I'm thinking about going, giving my doctor a phone call and saying, hi, I'd like to make an appointment. What's wrong, Mr. Van Damme? Is there something with your heart? Are you having trouble breathing? No, my nose is running a bit. It's dripping. Get out of here, you cry baby. Dripping a little bit. Cut it out. Grow up. Be a man.
Ron Van Damme is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
Please don't.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Damme Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
I used to like that sort of thing.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Damme Show.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Damme.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Damme. I'm the person that she said I was. I'm me. I've got to be me. That used to be a phrase, and I'm trying to find myself. And that used to be a phrase back in the 60s and 70s. Well, how are you? Oh, I'm good, but I'm trying to find myself. Well, you're right there. What's your problem? And I guess that meant that you were trying to discover who you were. People in the 60s and 70s were very, very deep. They were like way too deep. And that was due to all the drugs that everybody was taking. All the marijuana and the Quaaludes and things like that. It was like a drug generation. And it made you so introspective that you came up with these strange phrases, and it was like, I'm trying to find myself. Well, do you know where you parked? I mean, where did you park yourself? What's the last place yourself was in? I'll help you find you. Well, actually, you're right in front of me. I found you before you did. Isn't that odd? You are yourself, but you can't find yourself. Here I am standing here, and I'm telling you, you were standing right in front of me. That's where you are. No, Ron, I'm talking about the deeper inner soul. Oh, that. Well, I don't know where that is. I have no idea. I assume that's somewhere within you, but I don't know. I don't know you, and I don't want to know you because you're weird, man. You're on drugs or something. No, I'm just trying to find myself. You're right there. Stop it. Get a mirror. There you are. Cut it out. But they didn't take it literally. It was a spiritual thing. Everything was spiritual in the 60s and 70s. Everything. Everything was spiritual. Yeah. How do you feel about that? Well, my inner soul tells me that I must look deeper. Oh, shut up. Just answer the question. Stop with this stuff. When I was a little child, they have a thing called, I believe it's called a Rorschach test. I don't know who this Rorschach guy was. But they were ink blots, and they looked like things, and they could tell your mental status by how you interpreted the ink blot picture that you were looking at. And everything to me looked like someone took a dump on an ink blot. I mean, it was all all very anal for me. Ron, does this look like a butterfly to you, or a mountain? No, looks like somebody's pen leaked all over the paper. I mean, I don't think I'm that introspective. Does it look like your view of heaven? Is that what that ink blot looks like? No, it looks like a mess. Looks like someone took a dump on a piece of paper. I'm sorry, I can't help you. I will help you find yourself. You're right there. I was not, that stuff was kind of stupid. When I was about 14 years old, I started reading books on hypnotism. I was fascinated by hypnotism in the sense that if I had the ability to take somebody and put them into an altered state that was totally under my control, what a wonderful thing that would be. If only I can control the entire population of the United States to do my bidding, that would be a wonderful thing. And I wouldn't have them do evil things. I'd have them only do good things. Like, milk the cow for me, please. You know, if there was no milk, there was no milk and milk cartons, I would through mind control, I would make most of the population of the United States start to make milk cows for me. Make me some milk. I would mind control everything, but in a good way, in a good way. And of course, when you're 14, 15 years old, you're getting into your sexual age, you're starting to discover yourself, not find yourself, but discover yourself. Discover your sexual being. That was the sexual being discovery time. And it was around the same time that I was interested in hypnotism. And of course, in a very shallow, horrible sense, I said to myself, my God, if I can hypnotize a lovely girl, that would be something, for obvious reasons. What a horrible, horrible thing to think. So I read books and books and books about hypnotism. And one of the books was Self-Hypnotism. And I thought, oh my God, could I actually start to control myself? That would be odd. I remember going to summer camp. My parents sent me to summer camp every year. And it's not because I was a difficult child or I was unruly. It's because they just wanted to get me out of the house. I never left the house. I didn't like playing with other children because they acted like children. I spent a lot of time in everything that I wanted was in my room. I had a television set. I had a whole radio set up. I had my bed. Loved to sleep. Had my bed. Had a nice, comfortable armchair. All my clothes were in there. I had a clothes closet and a chest of drawers. I had a blackboard and a desk. And toys. I had everything I could possibly want in my room. Why would I want to go out of it? When I left my room, I had to deal with people. I had to deal with parents and siblings and friends and other kids in the neighborhood. Why would I possibly want to deal with that when I had everything I wanted within the confines of my room? And my parents could never punish me. Ron, you've done a really bad, you didn't eat the rest of your dinner. Your grades in school are not good. You have to stay in your room. You stay in your room for 3 days. You can't leave your room for 3 days. You can't go out and play. Oh, okay, no problem. Cool. Actually, thank you. Actually, punish me. Punish me for a year. Make me stay in my room. Oh, no. Make me stay in my room where I have everything I could ever want. Oh, please punish me more. That didn't work on them. So what my parents did every summer was, as soon as the school season was over, they sent me to summer camp for the entire summer. But that's where I learned certain things. A, I learned my sexuality. That was my first sexual encounter in summer camp. B, I learned that I really, really don't like people. It solidified. But I did have my first sexual thing there, and it was really, and it was in a lake. I'll be honest with you. Let's talk. I mean, you tell me your sexual experience. I'll tell you mine. It was in a lake. There was this girl that I had met, and we would spend the evenings together walking around the camp, and then we would one night we snuck out from our cabins and we went into the lake. It was the camp was on a lake. And as we were up to our necks in lake water, we discovered our bodies together. It was a wonderful experience. In a lake yet. In a body of water. Two bodies plus a body of water. It was wonderful. Okay, let me hear about your first sexual experience.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that make me. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
All right. let's not. How about that idea? How about let's not? So anyway, that's how I discovered my body. I didn't know I had one. I had no idea. I didn't really know. I knew that my head was mounted on something, but I didn't know that it was a sexual being. I thought it was just something to put my head on. You know, that's why the body existed. It just, you know, it just does things to support my head. But then I learned it does other things. It actually can give you pleasure. I did not know that. Dogs know that immediately. Dogs have no problems. Dogs can lick themselves anywhere they want. Anywhere. And it's not just to keep clean. Sometimes I think that's the excuse of the dog. I think the dog licks its legs and its paws like foreplay in a way, like forepaws play. I think that's what that is. Because eventually they'll work into the area, you know what I'm saying, the area, and they'll start licking that, and then they're obsessive about it. They don't stop. And I'm thinking, that's a talent. That's a talent. That could win a talent show if it was a person. Not that I want to watch it, but it's a talent. Good for the dogs. Good for you, dogs. Good. Good for you. I'm proud of you. You know what you want, you get it. Do you know why dogs are so successful at being able, you know why? Because they found themselves. That's why. They know exactly where they are. Have you had enough of this? Because I got to tell you something. As I'm saying all this stuff, I've had enough of this too. It's really too much. I'm done with this. Let's move on.
Hi, this is Bob Robinson from Bob's Handy Around the House. I'm a local handyman. I've been in business for the last 50 years on my own, doing light repair work in our area. Whatever you need done, carpentry, painting, floors, tiling, yard work, I can do it all for you. I'll come to your home and do the work for a very reasonable fee. Naked. I should probably mention that I will be naked while I do this work. Buck naked, not a stitch on me, waving in the wind, in my birthday suit, showing what God gave me, naked as a jaybird. I'll be naked the whole time. I show up naked, I do the work naked, you pay me while I'm naked. Bob's Handy Around the House, Bob Robinson. You can look me up on Facebook, where I am naked.
Hey, I do this every single weekday. And you don't have to be here when I'm doing it. It's always there. You can listen any time of day while you're eating dinner, just before you go to bed. I guarantee I'll put you to sleep very quickly. Oh, yeah, whatever you want. In your car, when you're driving home, whatever, whatever. It's up to you. Where do you find me? Well, you can go to the couple of websites there. You can go to NewEnglandBroadcasting.com, NewEnglandTalkRadio.com, the Podbean Network, or you can go to iTunes, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, your Alexa app, all those things, and then some. It's hard not to find me, because I found myself. I have a Twitter account. I just don't know how to twat very well. But I'm going to begin twatting rather shortly, probably this weekend. I've had the Twitter account in order to twat for about 5 years now, and I think I tweeted once or twice, and not since. I can't get on the Twitter account because Trump's always on it, and it's blocking me somehow. But I'll get on this weekend somehow, and I guess what I'm supposed to do is make little comments that are 40 words or less, or 140 characters, or whatever, and you're supposed to say something, and then, like, get the hell out of there. And I don't understand the purpose of it. I think it's absolutely stupid. But I've been told by my social media advisor that I must do this in order to keep the ratings high. To which I say, oh, really? I don't know what you're talking about. I also have a Facebook page. I have like a lot of them because I always create them and then I figure a better way of doing it. So I've got like 4 pages. But you can go to NewEnglandBroadcasting.com, I think it's just New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. Either one, do The Ron Van Dam Show or do New England Broadcasting on Facebook. And you'll go to the Facebook page and you'll see I haven't done a damn thing on it for about, 14 months. I really need to kick myself in the behind and start getting into the social media thing. So, there you go. I hate social media so much, you have no idea. I wish it never happened. Unless you're having a birthday or trying to find somebody that you haven't talked to in 20 years. Other than that, it serves no purpose whatsoever. It's a control mechanism. So here's the deal. Before I was talking about hypnotism, and I did read many books on it, and so I went to summer camp, and what I would do is walk around and try to hypnotize people. And first I did it on guys, you know, they would sit down on a bench and I would sit next to them and I would talk in a very, very mellow, very slow, very calming voice. You are getting tired. You see a stream, the water is flowing down the stream in a comfortable, silent, very soothing manner, flowing and flowing as it gently rises over the rocks and flows downward toward the river, flowing the cool breeze going through your hair, flowing like a breeze. And I would fall asleep myself. But that was the voice that I used. And some people would actually get very, very relaxed and very tired. But nobody actually was under my spell. And then I started trying it on women, on the girls at the camp. And one girl was really into hypnotism. She told me, she says, yes, I've been hypnotized many times, and not just to cluck like a chicken, but I've been hypnotized in order to help my grades go up and do my homework and to relax me and remove stress. So I can hypnotize you. Can I try? Oh, yes. Please, Ron, hypnotize me. This is going to be fun. So you are flowing down a river, and the breeze in your hair, and your lips glowing as it drips down your breast. No, that's something else. That was a romance novel. But I did that voice, and she, and her head bowed forward, her eyes closed, and she became very, very silent. And I don't know if I had really hypnotized her or not. I couldn't tell whether she was really hypnotized or whether she was fooling with me. You know, whether she was fooling around with me, making believe she was hypnotized, and a joke was on me. I don't know which it was, and I'll never know to this day. But I remember that year I had hypnotized her a few times. She wasn't the one I was in the lake with. But I had hypnotized her a few times, and every time she claimed that she was hypnotized by me. I don't know. I'll never know. See, I can't find her on Facebook. I know her name, but I can't find her on Facebook. Do you know why I can't? Because Facebook doesn't retain maiden names. Women are maidens. They're born with a name. They stay with the name until they get married. Then they change their name so nobody can find them ever again. Some people keep their maiden names in the middle, like Mary Walcott Anderson, her real name being Mary Walcott, her married name being Mary Anderson. She's Mary Walcott Anderson. You can find those people sometimes. But if a woman changes her name because she's married, I can't find her. Not that I want to then. I'm just saying, should I have that inclination, men carry the same name through their entire life. You can find them so easily. Men are so easy in every way. They're so simplistic. They're so surface. They're so superficial. They don't change their names. They don't care about anything. If a woman says, "What are you thinking about?" the guy will always say, "What are you talking about? I'm not thinking about anything." It's just, men are just so simplistic, it's actually annoying. And women are so deep that it's actually annoying. And in a very similar way, because men are so simple, they just never change their names. It just doesn't happen. It's just like, it's men are too lazy. It's like, if it was men that retained the name of the woman, in other words, if you got married and the rule was you get the name of the woman, men would say, "Nah, I don't really, I don't, it's too much trouble. It's too much trouble. Do you have to go visit an office somewhere and change your name legally? I mean, I don't know. It's just like, it's too much trouble. It's too much trouble. I'd rather not get married if that's going to be the case. I'm not changing my name, and I'm not getting married. So don't even go there. If I don't have to change my name, yeah, I'll marry you. Sure, what the hell. But I got to change my name? Let's forget it. Just forget it. I love you. You're a wonderful person, but changing my name, I'm afraid not. Do I have to change my socks too? Do I have to change my underpants every day? Oh no, I'm not getting married then. I'm sorry, no, that's a deal breaker. Sorry, that's not going to happen. Nice concept and everything, but no, thank you. Thank you very much, but no. How about no? Do I have to do something? When I get married, do I have to actually go somewhere? There's a ceremony? Oh, no, thank you. That's too much. That's too much. Tell you what, you plan the whole day, girlfriend, you plan the whole day, you get the reception hall, you plan the ceremony, keep me out of it, and I'll marry you. But if I got to get involved in any way in any of the planning, it's just not worth getting married. It's nice knowing you. Have a nice day. Hope you have a nice life, but I can't, that's too much for me. My simplistic mind does not go that far, and there's no way. I mean, the marriage thing is a cute idea. Very, very cute. Yeah, lovely. Picket fence, have babies, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's great. Thanks a lot. But I got to go through that stuff. Do I have to visit your mother? I do? Forget it. No way. Look, you're a nice person. Goodbye. There's someone better than me, I'm sure. Go with them, because I'm not visiting your mother on a regular basis. No way. No. No, 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 no.
The Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
Do you know what AFib is? It's not when you tell a small lie. That is not AFib. This is like a heart irregularity, a heart rhythmic irregularity. I think we all think we have it at a certain point in our lives. If you're under stress, you'll feel that little flutter in your heart, and you always wonder, well, that could be a few things. It could be gas, which is usually the case with me, or it could be anxiety, or it could be that your heart is actually like skipping beats there or doubling beats, which is probably not a great thing. So how do you find out? And what do you do if you have an irregular heartbeat? Well, technology, apparently, medical technology is really coming along big time. And there's stuff you can do not only to monitor it without doing surgery or implants or anything. But, I mean, it's pretty heavy, man. It's, you know, I like it when we have physical problems and then we come up with ways to take care of them. I don't like it when I do interviews with doctors and this is a terrible disease. It's very rare, but it's terrible. Well, doctor, how is that treated? No, there's no treatment. There's no treatment. Then why are you telling me? I don't know. I just felt like I should. But there's nothing I can do about it. Well, then shut up, man. If there's nothing you can do about it, then why are you even diagnosing me? If you can't do anything for me, why are you telling me? Leave me alone then. But AFib, different, coming along. That's our interview for today, and let's hook up with our guest here.
Good morning, Ron.
Trudy Lubin joins us now. She's a leading AFib patient advocate and founder, CEO and trustee of Arrhythmia Alliance. And we're talking about an irregular heart rhythm, which, of course, is a problem, and we call it AFib. What does AFib exactly mean?
AFib, atrial fibrillation, is where the four chambers of our heart don't beat in rhythm. So AFib is an arrhythmia, an irregular heart rhythm disorder. AFib is responsible for AF-related stroke, one of the leading causes of stroke, and AFib-related strokes are more disabling, debilitating, and often prove to be fatal. Up to 6 million Americans have AFib, but there are so many more who are yet to be diagnosed. Yeah. Not everyone is in AFib 24/7, so often it's difficult to capture the arrhythmia, the irregular heart rhythm. So it's important that we all know our pulse rhythm. We can all learn how to take our pulse ourselves, a manual pulse check, but then we also need an EKG to help diagnose. But when you're not permanently in AF, then it can be difficult. However, latest technology, there's so much new technology out there, and one of the latest things is the iRhythm Zio patch, which is fantastic. It just sticks to your chest. There are no wires. There's anybody can just stick it on their chest. And this will record your rhythm of your heart, your EKG, for up to 14 days and capture any irregular arrhythmia and, in particular, AFib.
Would not all of us, from time to time, have an irregular situation? For example, anxiety can cause little flutters in that area, and they go away. I mean, are there other symptoms that are not? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of us suffer with palpitations.
Yeah.
Various things, and a lot of it, you just need the reassurance it goes away, and there's nothing to worry about. However, we should never ignore these flutters, these palpitations, in case there is an underlying, potentially fatal arrhythmia. And that's why it's important to know your pulse and to know which EKG might be best for you. And so we've produced a booklet, which EKG is best for you. We have our website, knowyourpulse.org/US. Which also has this information. It tells you how to learn to take your own pulse manually, but also which EKG is best for you and to find out more about the Zio patch, because this analyzes, your doctor then gets the results and is able to diagnose and then offer the appropriate treatment. Or, if there is nothing to worry about, offer you reassurance.
Right. What causes AFib? Is it something that just happens to some people? Is it hereditary? Is it something that we can prevent through diet, etc.?
That's an excellent question. One in four of us, by the time we're in our 60s, will develop AF. And just a few years ago, it was thought that it was just something normal, when in fact it's not. All the studies have shown now that it's a leading cause of heart failure, AF-related stroke, and it certainly isn't normal for our hearts not to be beating in rhythm. And there is a difference between heart rate and heart rhythm. Our heart rate should be somewhere between 60 and 100 beats per minute, and we get told that when we have our blood pressure taken. That is not the same as knowing your heart rhythm, hence why I'm stressing we should know our pulse to know our heart rhythm. And yes, sometimes it can be brought on after we've had an infection or our lifestyle, too much alcohol, diet, etc. But all too often, it is just something that develops. If identified, if diagnosed, with anticoagulation therapy, we can reduce our risk of AF-related stroke. And then with the various treatments that are now available, whether drug or device, we can manage and we can go on to lead active, normal lives. Without it, we are breathless, we're exhausted, it's debilitating. And of course, if you go on to have an AF-related stroke, it can be fatal. So our message during AFib Awareness Month is know your pulse, and to do that, make sure you have the right EKG and make sure that all technology is offered to you, from knowing your own manual pulse through to having a simple patch through to having a 12-lead EKG.
Okay.
So knowyourpulse.org/US will tell you all about this.
Okay. Most of us, if not all of us, go for annual checkups. At least we should be going for annual checkups. And that's about the only time that an EKG is taken. And it should be taken once a year at your annual checkup. But I guess what we're saying is that that may not necessarily be efficient, because you can have incidents that don't appear on that particular day out of 365. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, some people are permanently in AF, and that's much easier to detect. But for many, they're not. So it's trying to capture that. And having a one-off EKG, it may not be that minute, that hour, that day when you're in AFib. So this is why it's fantastic with new technology that, you know, it's possible to just literally wear something similar to a Band-Aid on your chest, which is monitoring for 14 days. You know, there are Holter monitors, but they tend to only monitor maybe 48 hours. Over 14 days, you're more likely to detect any irregular heart rhythm, any arrhythmia.
Okay. Is there a difference between a regular heart beat and a deficiency in one of the chambers? In other words, I have a friend who says one of their chambers is not functioning 100%. It's down to like 50, and the others are okay. Is that a result of this? Is that what causes this? Is it unrelated?
It can be related. It can be unrelated, and that's why it's important to find out whether it's a plumbing issue with your heart. You know, is it a leaking valve, etc., or is it the electrical side of your heart? And that's why the importance of having continuous monitoring and EKG, so that it can decide if there is an irregularity with your heart rhythm versus if it's a plumbing problem, both of which are important to get detected and diagnosed.
God, it sounds like we're a house. We could have an electrical problem or a plumbing problem. It's That's the same.
Absolutely, right. And that's the difference between a heart attack and sudden cardiac death.
Yeah.
A heart attack is to do with the plumbing, and sudden cardiac arrest is to do with the electrics. 1,000 people a day across the U.S. are dying sudden cardiac death. 80% of those could be saved if they were diagnosed through regular EKGs, and for some, if there was a defibrillator nearby to shock their heart back into rhythm. But yes, that there's the difference between the plumbing and the electrics, and the EKG is monitoring the electrics of the heart.
Yeah,
well, and that is the difference between your pulse rate, which is more on the plumbing and how it's pumping the heart around, versus your rhythm of the heart, which is whether it's in time, in tune. Yeah.
Good information. If you don't maintain the house is going to fall down. So I guess that's pretty much the analogy.
Absolutely.
There. Okay. Where do we go for more information?
www.knowyourpulse.org/US.
Perfect. Well, this has been very enlightening. You've told me a lot of things that I did not know before. Trudy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Well, there you go. Always interesting stuff. Always something, huh? It's always something. If it's not one thing, it's another. It's always something. Do you ever wake up in the morning and say to yourself, this is a good day. I feel really good today. When you start like noticing that, that's... you know you've hit a different plateau. Because when you're younger and you feel good every day, you just feel good every day. You don't make notice of it. You make notice of when you feel really bad. Like, I woke up this morning and I was like, wasn't feeling good, man. It wasn't, didn't feel like myself. Felt like you, not myself. And then you get a little bit older and then all of a sudden you remark at the good days. Wow, I woke up this morning. I felt great. I felt great this morning. Like, that's a revelation. Like, that's out of the ordinary. Usually I get up, I don't feel that great. But today when I got up, I felt great. That's the opposite. It's kind of sad. I think it's nice to appreciate when you do feel good. And when you don't feel good and you do feel good, you appreciate the fact you feel good. That's good. That's a good thing, because those are wonderful days. Oh, what a wonderful day that is. You just feel like kicking your heels and smiling at everything, and you put on a happy face.
Gray skies are gonna clear up, put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up, put on a happy face. Take off the gloomy mask of tragedy, it's not your style.
That's right.
You look so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile.
Smile.
Pick out a pleasant outlook.
Brush your teeth. Do you ever, like, just brush your teeth and then when you're finished, you feel so fresh in your mouth and you just feel like, oh, I can start the day, my mouth feels... fresh, like your mouth is the barometer of your entire body. So brush your teeth. Seriously, now, go do it, because you stink.
Put on a happy face. Put on a happy face. And if you're feeling cross and bickerish, don't sit and whine. Think of banana splits and licorice, and you feel fine. I knew a girl so gloomy.
You don't want to be around gloomy people. And, like, sometimes I'll look in the mirror and I'll see, like, I don't smile that much. I really don't. I don't smile that much. So now I'm trying, like, on purpose to smile more. And it hurts, man, because my mouth isn't used to smiling so much. And it's like, causing my mouth muscles to overwork. but it's important because when I'm walking down the street and I see somebody else smiling, I feel good too. Better. Do you? Okay, let's go start our day or end our day, whatever time you're listening to this. I wish you peace. Be with you again tomorrow.